November 3rd meeting of the planning committee.
Very good. Thank you, Andrea. We have two items on the planning committee agenda today. We're going to have two different presentations that I think the board will find interesting. The first is related to a tank painting contract that we're initiating for early next year, and specifically related to the color proposal for the tank. The color that we've historically used is no longer available, and so we're making a decision on where to go with that. And then the second presentation will be on the Dyco site that we have heard quite a little bit about. The city is trying to acquire, and we have a couple of interests there, one related to water quality, some contamination that's existed at the site for some time and is under ongoing remediation, and then also some significant transmission facilities that we have on the site. Mike McKernan will ultimately share the Dyco discussion with us, but before that, first we're going to hear from Jaewon Lim, who is an engineer in our engineering department here at Des Moines Waterworks. He's the newest member of our engineering team, and he joined us in February. So almost his entire tenure here has been during the pandemic, which I'm sure has been a little bit of a struggle. Jaewon is also the newest US citizen on the team, having attained citizenship in June of this year. So congratulations, Jaewon, on that, of course. And with that, we'll turn it over to you and you can tell us about the tank painting project.
All right, let me share the screen quick. You see the screen?
Yes, we can.
All right, this presentation will cover about the project that Ted just mentioned. We are trying to paint one of our standpipe called Wolchinski. This presentation will cover what we found and then the thought process we went through and our plan for the future. Index is background, again, finding. We looked at some coating options. We looked at what we have in existing pipings, standpipes, and then colors we looked at, color we selected, and then potential schedule for painting. So Des Moines Waterworks owns a few multiple towers and then three standpipes to serve the metropolitan area. One of the pipe, Wolchinski standpipe, shows some painting failures in the past. We found it probably in 2013 or 14 through tank inspections, and then we've been planning on that. All standpipes we have are painted with powder blue from Tinemic Incorporated. Again, during while we're planning for new coating systems, we found existing color is no longer available in the market. It can be produced with extra cost, 10 to 15%. With this material, volume of material that we need to paint this standpipe, we're looking at approximately $50,000 extra cost with extended lead time to order, because the company needs to customize the production line and make it this specific color. And then also we looked at some overcoating versus new coating. Long story short, interior surface cannot be overcoated at all, just because it's severe damages and condition. For exterior, we looked at these options. But if you look at the cost comparison, overcoating means maximum $350,000. With that money and budget spent, you can only expect maximum 10 years of life expectancy. Overall time we need to do overcoating is maximum 5 weeks. On the other side, if you look at new coating, by spending extra $150,000, which means total cost of $500,000, you can expect 30 years of life expectancy. Still, overall coating period is maximum 6 weeks, so there is only 1 week of difference overall of construction. These standpipes are what we have now. Nolan standpipe was overcoated in 2012, and the right side is tennis standpipe. And then this picture shows what we have in Wolchinski standpipe. You can see the surface is pretty badly stained and damaged. Is the gloss is gone. It's been exposed to UV light and then it's been deteriorated over and over. Built in 1955, it contains 2.4 million gallons. And the location is on East Park Avenue in Pleasant View driveway, and then southeast 9th of that in Des Moines area. Colors that we looked at, this color, the top left, is powder blue. It is supposed to be what we have on those, you know, three standpipes. But again, it's not available in the market anymore. So we looked at different options. One is cumulus. These all numbering systems are from Tinemic. So even though names are a little bit awkward, maybe not familiar with, but just this is how it's named by the manufacturer. Star, spring rain, spring water. We took a look at different colors again with multiple discussions, and then we actually got samples on metal to see how it looks like. I'm not sure if you can see this, but I'll try to show you, yeah. These are actual metal samples with actual painting material. So we could actually compare the difference in hands, because if you just, it is hard to picture when you look at these digital samples on standpipes. What we want to point out here is cumulus is a little bit various from white to light gray. What we picked, even though in digital samples looks a bit greenish, but actual color is pretty white. This is what we picked. Again, this is a very popular color for water towers and standpipes in communities. And we, again, take a look at the sample in hands. The selected color was presented to two neighborhoods in association. One is called Indianola Association. We presented it through a virtual meeting. That association is actually on north of Park Avenue. So our standpipe actually sits in their neighborhood association range. And then the other association was South Park Association. It was communicated through emails, but both agreed to with the selected color, and there was no really objection. About the schedule, typically coating of water tower and standpipes requires certain temperature requirements, certain temperature ranges and humidity. It cannot be too humid, it cannot be too cold or too hot. So we are shooting for next spring or autumn to meet the temperature and humidity requirement. It will take up to 6 weeks to complete both interior and exterior painting of the standpipe. That's what I have. And any questions?
Thank you for sharing that. I do have two questions. The $350,000-ish cost, is that for all three or is that just for the one?
Just one. We are going to paint just this one specific standpipe. Okay. And then the cost you're mentioning is 354 is one standpipe overcoating, and then $500,000 for coating of the exterior.
And on this slide, I noticed that I recognize that a new coating gives us a life expectancy of 25 to 30 years. I'm just curious if the neighborhood association or anybody had any considerations, or even if it is possible that there would be any opportunity for public art or anything like that with our water towers, or is it a policy for I don't know, safety or any other issue to just paint them one solid color?
You know, Andrea, I will have to say we haven't talked about public art or, you know, decorating them, if you will. We did have a fairly lengthy conversation about putting a logo or a name on the standpipe. And that's something that I think every time we paint a tower, we have that conversation. Should it say Des Moines Water Works, or should it say Des Moines, or should it say something? And the bottom line is there's a meaningful cost associated with putting a logo on the paint, and it's a very specialized paint. The paint we use has to be compatible. I don't think it would be something, you know, this epoxy paint that we use is a two-part epoxy with a lot of all the compounds in it. You have to wear PPE and masks and things. So we wouldn't be able to allow neighborhood people to participate in the painting. You know, I suppose we could do some sort of a competition, if you will, or, you know, design, but there is a lot of cost associated with some of the really, there are some amazing tanks out there. I remember in the Chicago area, the city of Rosemont has a huge rose painted on their tank, and it's beautiful, but it's extraordinarily expensive. And so we did not look into the cost of doing those things. We thought, keeping with tradition, we would paint them a solid color and try to get them to blend into the sky and into the background. That was really our goal. So that's where we landed. But if the board has perspectives or desires, we could certainly look at some of those things.
Ted, I had a question. Do we have much trouble with graffiti on the tanks?
You know, I'm going to say we don't have a lot of trouble. It certainly has happened, but we do have security fences around all of the tanks, a chain link, and we don't have a significant amount of vandalism of any kind, including graffiti, but it certainly has happened, and we've had to go out in my tenure here and overpaint a square that had been painted on, but it's not a significant issue historically.
Okay, and then I had another question. So if we were going to do some kind of public art, would it have to be the same kind of paint?
Yeah, I would say yes, Diane, that it would have to be the same kind of paint. You know, this paint is also specifically designed so that other stuff won't stick to it. So if we wanted to do something on the tank that would be, you know, basically permanent, we would want it to be the same kind of anemic and part of the same paint system. And, you know, that can be done, but it would have to be the same paint.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Jay Wan, I have a question for you. I was pleased to hear that a lot of other places have used this color or gone with this color. I'm just curious if there are certain colors environmentally that would keep birds from flying into them, or you know, other environmental concerns that you took into consideration?
I don't think we looked at environmental standpoint, to be honest with you. But as far as I know, when I talked to consulting firms and then paint manufacturers about this color, they didn't bring up any concerns from birds, you know, hitting and then getting injured, some stuff like that. So that I just assumed there wouldn't be any issues of, you know, creatures getting injured. That's all I kind of went through. All right, any other question?
Yeah, I was glad to hear the neighborhood associations have been engaged in this process. And I thought Andrea's question is really interesting about artwork or possibly a logo. I think Ted makes some good points, but certainly an interesting thought worth considering. So with those things in mind, I'm curious what type of feedback you got from the neighborhood associations, if they just signed off on it or if they had opinions, and And certainly if we ever did explore artwork or logos, I would want to thoroughly engage the neighborhood associations and make sure that's what they wanted. So was there any other input from them or any comments from the neighborhoods about this?
We got a few comments from Indiana Hills Association. It was kind of the same thing. They were asking if we're going to add logo on our tank. Obviously we said the same thing. And then other than that, we provided some samples, just digital sample of the color. They tried to just picture in larger scale, but that was it. And I don't think they had any other comments other than that.
Sure, I wouldn't expect them to have a lot to say, but just glad to hear they were supportive.
Is this something that we can decide or sign off here? Does it go to the full board for any sort of action, Ted?
The color would typically not go to the full board. Obviously, the construction contract, when we bid it, we're planning to do that fairly soon. We'll come to the board to request permission to bid and then to award. But generally speaking, we have not asked the board for approval of the color. So, you know, this is kind of the forum where we were hoping for the board's consideration and consensus that the more of a white, what they call cumulus, is appropriate.
Sure, and I don't know if we have any strong feelings here on that. So it seems like you all have done your due diligence. You know, it does seem like an opportunity to engage the community, but I understand that the cost and timing isn't necessarily appropriate for that, but something to consider in the future as we potentially have to do more of these projects. But appreciate you bringing this forward and sharing this discussion with us.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. This is the kind of thing that, you know, the whole community sees, and we want to make sure the board knows. I would offer just one observation that that kind of powder blue color was a really popular tank color historically, and a lot of communities painted their tanks that color. But over the years, communities have really moved away from that. It feels to me like the fact that it's no longer available is a sign that maybe it's time for us to move along. And I've seen some tanks that were painted with this cumulus color that they're beautiful, I think. Now, I'm admittedly a water nerd and I like water towers, but I think it's a positive thing. Just want to make sure everyone's aware that's where we're headed, at least for this one.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jaywon, thank you very much for your time and attention to that and all your work on this project so far. Appreciate that, and especially the outreach to the neighborhood associations. I think that's a nice touch, just to make sure that when we are doing something this noticeable in their neighborhood, that they're aware and have the opportunity to see and provide feedback. So thank you for all that.
Welcome. I'll stop sharing.
Very good. Michael, we'll let you just move right into the DICO discussion.
Yeah, let me see if I can do this correctly. I'm not confident.
I'm confident, Michael.
I hate to say that. What are you seeing? Nothing yet. I haven't pushed the button.
No, now we're seeing we're seeing your presentation.
Okay.
Looks good.
Okay. Well, I hope to use no more than 10 minutes here, but we have a neighbor in the form of DICO, a manufacturing site to the east of us. We have two concerns here. One is water quality related, as Ted mentioned earlier. That water quality concern is really about a threat to our raw water collection. And you'll see that here very soon. On the distribution side, it's more about the property. We have easements on the property that that allow some very important water distribution arterial elements to travel through. So a very important piece of property to our east. Using a little help from Google Earth today, top half, you can certainly see the Fluor Drive Operations Center. Bottom half is the actual property in question here. You can see the Fluor and MLK infrastructure. But I just tried to, again, this is just me trying to be a drafter, just sketched in the relative position of the gallery, the northern parts of the gallery collection system. And just a reminder that this gallery is it's incredibly crucial to our raw water collection, and it's critical in our success from a finished water perspective. But you can see that gallery collection system extends northeast of the plant. It wraps around the north and west side of the plant. It actually extends down into the park just a short distance, less than a quarter mile probably, where it joins with the rest of the gallery, and then it comes flowing right into the plant. So that green line that's coming into the southeast corner of the pump station, that's the gallery, hopefully 20 to 30 million gallons a day of the finest raw water that we can get our hands on. That's its entry into the Fluor plant. You know, once the water's treated, we need to pump it out of the plant. And again, I have just shown the infrastructure leaving Fluor that is related to the Dyco property. There are other feeder mains that leave Fluor for lots of important reasons. We have customers north, south, and west of here. But this blue line that I've drawn across the middle of this Dyco property represents two 30-inch feeder mains in an easement. And these are facilities that are installed in the 20s and 30s. And then there's even another piece of pipe that runs along the eastern edge of this Dyco property that's like a 24-inch feeder main. So these are key assets for us from getting water out into the community. And so being able to operate and maintain a distribution system here is going to be important. Some important history here. We got to turn the clock back quite a ways here. But in 1983, TCE was detected in our gallery water. That was of great concern to us. TCE is a product that's been used in manufacturing. It's on the primary drinking water list of constituents that we should be concerned about. And so effectively there was an operation there at the Dyco plant that released this TCE to the environment, and it impacted ground water as well as soil. So the contamination over there is impacting the soil and the groundwater. So given our
Mike, can you refresh? I am not from Des Moines, so I don't know what the Dyco plant manufactured. I think it was pretty well, kind of done when I.
Yeah, the primary piece of information that I've found, Diane, is that there were some steel wheels and brakes that were manufactured. And so part of that manufacturing included some degreaser liquids, I will say. And those degreasing elements are what contained the TCE. And there was likely some other manufacturing over there, but that has been kind of the trail backward to where this came from. So if we want more details on what happened there, we can do some more research. But think brakes and think wheels and think degreaser. So you can see that northern part of that northeast leg of the gallery is, it's just across the river from this property. And so after this detection of TCE in 83, Waterworks arranged for, they're called packers, but we went into the gallery system at this yellow circle I put on here, and we just blocked it, we plugged it, so that that northeast leg it really can't collect any more water for us. It's, you know, we lost 1500 foot of the gallery system when we had to do that. That's probably close to 9% of the overall gallery length, if I did the math right. So somewhere right in this time, Dyco was kind of identified as the responsible party. And this process begins where there's an investigation in 85, there's a study in 86. And then by 1987, a mere 4 years after detecting this pollution, you know, there was a remedy in place that Dyco had to, you know, implement and operate and maintain. And they've been doing it for over 30 years. So that remedy, I just want to give you a little bit of information about the remedy. You know, the remedy includes a number of monitoring wells on both sides of the river, you know, on their property as well as ours. There are extraction wells on their property, locations where groundwater is being pumped out of the ground and directed to an air stripper. This air stripper is visible on this drawing, this little facility right here. And when that extracted water is presented to the air stripper, you know, these volatile compounds are allowed to just volatilize and enter the atmosphere. The water stream then just is directed to the Raccoon River. So there's a pretty comprehensive sampling plan that comes with the remedy. There's monthly sampling of varying complexity, depending on what month of the year it is. There's annual reports that they were to submit to EPA. And then there's these systemic, you know, 5-year reviews by EPA. And when those 5-year reviews were conducted by EPA, that generally included us, the waterworks, the city, and the responsible party in the form of Dyco / Titan. So that's the broadest overview. I mentioned the remedy, talked enough about that, but again, we do the math on this. This remedy's been in operation now for 33 years, roughly. There's been some success, clearly. A number of the extraction wells have been turned off because the detection of the pollutant is non-detect. There are other locations where detection is still there, so the pollution has not been completely removed. So the remedy in some shape or form, you know, continues. In the last 10 years, I would say there's been two kind of parallel things occurring. Dyco and Titan have certainly been communicating with EPA that there has been success and that, you know, maybe the remedy should come to an end. You know, that's certainly what they would prefer. EPA has not embraced that in totality. Parallel to some of those urgings by Dyco, the city of Des Moines and EPA have been communicating and conversing. You know, the city has a great interest in trying to improve the property, find a reasonable reuse. And so they've been communicating with EPA. In my view, those things all kind of come together. And in 2018, EPA conducted, with help of consultation, did this remedial process optimization study. Again, they're looking at remedial options that potentially could be implemented that might make the property a little more available for reuse. And so the report listed a couple things that would potentially be considered. You know, the air stripper of 35 years ago, there's much lower profile units. There's more aesthetically pleasing things that could be done. There's new technology out there that might even allow some of the actual pollution itself to be addressed, as opposed to continue with a pump and treat. So there's some options out there. The thing that's happened most recently that really kind of brought this to the agenda today was that collaboration and coordination between EPA and the city the city would, under the right conditions, like to be the owner of this property. And so there's a consent decree out there that details what it would take for the city to kind of become the owner of the property. The remedy or alterations to it would be the responsibility of the city at this point in time, if this was to transpire. And I think there's a good chance that it will. You know, they negotiated to get to this point. There's some process left here between public comment period and other elements of the negotiation that need to be completed. But I think there's a great chance that City of Des Moines could be the owner of this property in 2021. So I would like to just let you know that the city's been very responsive to us, you know, for more than maybe the past 15 years. I've been a little closer to that discussion, and they've always wanted to know what our concerns were, and we've been able to communicate those. And they are aware of those concerns as we, as they talk to potential developers. And so our position over here is really pretty easy to summarize. If from a water quality perspective, you know, protecting our gallery and making sure this plume doesn't travel any further or closer to us, you know, anything that would be implemented over there that would, you know, go after the pollution in a more direct way, or a pump and treat system that would, you know, make the plume go south, southeast, you know, away from us, those would be things that we would be supportive of. On the distribution side, you know, we need to be able to, you know, we certainly hope we don't have problems with these dual 30-inch feeder mains and even the 24-inch feeder main, but should we have problems, you know, we need a site design that is mindful of that. And so certainly creates a little hurdle for a developer to, you know, be aware of that, but there's optimism in our camp that they could find a way to lay out a site, and Dyco did it before they ever went into operation. So it's not inconceivable that someone else could find a way to lay out a site that took this easement into account. And if someone had the funds to relocate some of this, then that would be another option. That would be likely expensive. But I think I'll stop there if I've created any questions or confusion.
So just making sure that I understand this, Dyco and Titan would, Dyco/Titan, would like to readdress how things are being remediated. EPA is not so excited about exploring that, but if this does transfer into Des Moines ownership, would Des Moines have the opportunity to look at some of that updated technology and doing things a little bit different there?
Absolutely. That's kind of the, I think, the motivation for the city.
Sure.
If they're the owner and they're very familiar with this optimization study and some of the different ideas, they can work more closely with a developer to give them a sense of what, you know, a remedy in some fashion still needs to operate, but let's get creative here. You know, can we put something in that is maybe more aesthetically pleasing, potentially even something that might move the plume away from the waterworks? There are options out there to do both of those things.
And we feel, as you just kind of mentioned there towards the end, that if the city was the owner, we'd be in a good position and a good relationship to help kind of direct what would be ideal for our needs and requirements.
Yeah, all the signals to date from the city are they've been very responsive, Diane, to our concerns and trying to, you know, be protective. We can't take a position to say, oh, it'll be okay, just turn it off and, you know, just
I think this might be my last question. Do we have any concerns? I mean, my experience a million years ago, I started my career as a environmental planner in brownfields and superfunds. In my experience, when you've got a site like this, there are only certain things that can go on this site. Are we concerned about what the city's potential plans for this may be, or are we pretty confident that whatever it's going to be is going to be better than what we're currently experiencing?
Yeah, I think it's going to look just like this until someone with a greater vested interest, like the city, gets involved. So, you know, they're going to have to do this the right way, and there's going to be challenges with that. But again, I think there's optimism on the city's part that they can potentially find a developer that has a concept or an idea that might allow this property to be reused and reused in a way that is, you know, a little more aesthetically pleasing to the downtown entry there.
Andrea, I might try to address that a little bit and then kind of tack on to my own questions. And I should disclose, this is a property I wrote about for years in my journalist days. So I have a little bit of lay knowledge about it, or just familiarity, no real knowledge. But my understanding from years of conversations with folks in the city is this was always thought of as something, not necessarily a park, but there was talks of a soccer stadium. Now that might go next door, but some kind of use is my understanding, that something that's not housing or offices, because there's a belief that we're not going to have people living, you know, spending hours and hours on end sitting in this brownfield site, but something that, you know, people could use but maybe aren't absorbing for long periods of time. So I know those are the ideas that have been talked about. I don't have any particular insight about what the latest is or what's being discussed these days, but I know that was kind of the idea. I'm kind of curious if what staff thinks, are there particular uses that you find more problematic or more promising than others? Or maybe it doesn't matter as long as, you know, our infrastructure is respected and all that. Does staff have any thoughts on that? What types of uses would be most welcome or unwelcome here?
You know, I'm just going to go back to those two bullets. Those are the ones that are clearly on engineering's mind. I'm not sure I can offer anything beyond that. Ted, would you think there's something more we can?
This is Sue. This has been a top priority for the city as we've gone on the partnership trip probably the last 4 to 5 years. And obviously, because they would like to do something, everyone understands that they cannot disturb the ground because of all the chemicals that are in it, that could cause all kinds of issues with it being right next to the river. But the other kind of complicated issue is, as I have understood it when we've gone to DC, is the fines that Dyco and Titan have had, they have failed to pay. So now I think the EPA is stepping in, asking for this $11.5 million in fines from Dyco and Titan. So, but I just sent an article to you, Ted, if you want to share it with everyone. It was a September article of what the latest was on the site. But this has been a long-standing concern environmentally. Everything Mike has said is correct.
And Sue, I'll get that sent out here momentarily, but I would offer in response to Joel's specific question about uses that would be more desirable or less desirable. I think our answer to that is similar to the answer we would have really for any facility of ours that is in easement, where we don't want to see a facility that or use there that would result in potential construction of structures over our easement. And we're going to need a pretty wide easement there. As Mike said, there are two parallel 30-inch transmission mains that run through there. you know, we're going to be looking for a 100-foot wide swath through there that doesn't have any structures in it. So something like a parking lot in the area where our facilities exist would be a use that we would likely applaud. Park area would be great, you know, but I think that they literally have to have paved surface over this entire site. So it couldn't be grass or any kind of other surface other than asphalt or concrete. So I think best case scenario, Joel, we're looking at some sort of paving over our easement area structures that are far removed so that we have access in and out of there with our equipment. And then of course, as Mike has shared, you know, some sort of use that allows the continuation of that remedy that is preventing the movement of these contaminants towards our gallery system. And beyond that, you know, I think we can be fairly flexible and open-minded.
And I would encourage you to do so. I mean, our primary objectives should be one, the health and safety, the environment, protect, you know, containing the contaminants, and two, protecting our assets and infrastructure and ability to produce clean water. But to the extent that we can do those, I would encourage staff to work with the city and be helpful as much as possible. Considering this property is, you know, it's a gateway, as many people have said over the years, it's a gateway to downtown and to the heart of our city, and tens of thousands of people see it every day as they drive in, and what a prime, you know, spot near downtown, near Grays Lake, near the park, the river. So to the extent that we can be helpful in seeing some better use of this property and seeing it cleaned up, I'd like to see us do that.
Understood. Any other questions or comments for Mike today, or Jaywan for that matter?
Doesn't look like it. So we'll turn it to you for your general manager thoughts and comments.
No, Andrea, I think given that we do have customer relations scheduled, I'll reserve comment and we can move into the next meeting.
Sounds good. Well, then I will turn it over to Sue.